And CKUT's mighty Larky.
Another one.
Mr. Lucky and Charlene First Lady presents to you another Montreal Toronto Tam Fam's exclusive event. Wild Thoughts, All White Affair.
I don't know if you could take it. No, you wanna see me naked, naked, naked.
It's going on Saturday, October 7th, Thanksgiving long weekend, inside the Royal Alexander Ballroom, 875 Notre Dame in Lachine. And starring the mix up king himself, Raga Shanti.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Also featuring DJ Super Fridge, DJ Chris Cross, Little Thunder Sounds, Crystal Sounds, and DJ Nicholas. Advance tickets are $20 and $25 and more at the door. For more info, call 514-708-4885. Wild Thoughts, the all-white affair, featuring Raga Shanti, the mix-up king. Saturday, October 7th, inside the Royal Alexander Ballroom. You can't afford to miss this exclusive event. Be there.
We are the party tonight.
September 23rd, yeah, slice camera action. Mr. Cheeks Belmont, gon' be cracking. Lost Boy, living legend. Still here smashing. 4483 Saint Laurent is happening. Music by Keith Dean. CL gonna be opening. Hosted by Todd Smith. You know we be going in. Yeah, now you know we be going in. What's up? What's up? Yeah, yeah. Kirk Enterprise presents Mr. Cheeks of the legendary group Lost Boys. Saturday, September 23rd, Belmont. Visit Boom J's for your $20 tickets or the Facebook event page Mr. Cheeks.
Okay, After Hours is up right about now, but you know, so we're just going to get off the air and After Hours come and do the thing, and it was a pleasure.
Talking grand to the legend, plaisir.
Yes, sir. Trust me, it was a pleasure, it was my pleasure. Because when I hear that the Mighty Diamond is going to be in town, like some Carl Lewis, I'm going to say, Lewis, the Mighty Diamond more time, you know. Make sure so the man them there live in a person, a scholar. More and talk to the man them. And to say, yeah. So, Montreal, tomorrow night. Reality Theater over there. Mighty Diamond, Jack Cutter, and myself playing some music. See MC, Howard Card Stretch, and Pat Dillon. So, be safe. Yeah.
There is this thing. Do you realize
what is there is this thing?
Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing
on.
There is this thing going on.
What?
Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news? I'm brought to you live. Live.
Listening to the Prison Radio Show, a part of CKUT's Off the Hour. Prison Radio has been on the air for more than 10 years. Prison Radio seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggle by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging our ideas about what are prisons and the people inside our jails. Prison Radio is dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. This is in the interest of forging stronger ties with incarcerated and non-incarcerated people, ensuring that prisoners have direct control over their representation, and that our understanding of prisons be informed by those who live inside their walls. We invite anyone who is interested in collaborating on programming to contact us. Those who have been affected by the prison system in any way are encouraged to get involved. You can email news@cqt.ca or prison@cqt.ca, or you can call us at 514-448-4041, extension 6788. You're listening to CQUT Montreal Community Campus Radio, located on 90.3 FM on the dial, and www.cqut.ca online.
Welcome to the Prison Radio Show. My name is Candace.
My name's Noah.
Today we will be broadcasting part two of an interview that the Prison Radio Show did with political prisoner and former Black Panther, Jahlil Muntaquim. Part one aired on our show the last episode and involved Jahlil introducing himself and talking about the specifics of his case. Part two starts with Jahlil talking about political prisoners and ends with a discussion of how to bring about prison abolition. We will also be airing an interview done by the Final Straw Radio with a supporter of anarchist prisoner Kara Wilde. Kara is currently incarcerated in France awaiting trial. Her charges stem from a demonstration that happened as part of mass demonstrations in France against changes to the labor laws there. In the interview, Kara's supporter talks about the difficulties Kara faces as a trans woman in prison, explains the context of Kara's arrest, and talks about how folks can get in touch with Kara if they want to. We will end today's show with another piece from Prison Radio correspondent Muti Ajamu Osagboro. Muti is currently incarcerated in Pennsylvania, where he was sentenced to life in prison as a teenager. Muti is an advocate for others like him who are sentenced to life as children. In today's piece, Muti talks about his plans once he is released, a likely possibility given that the Supreme Court of the U.S. struck down laws that allow states to sentence people under the age of 18 to life in prison. But first, some news.
From itsgoingdown.org, after Ramsey Orta filmed the police killing of Eric Garner, he became a target for harassment and retribution from the NYPD, leading to his eventual conviction on trumped-up drugs and weapons charges. While the cop who killed Eric Garner walked free, Ramsey is still incarcerated. Here's an update from his support network. Like so many families across the nation, We Cop Watch is tasked with supporting one of our loved ones serving time in the prison industrial complex. As Ramsey comes up on his first year of incarceration, with three to go, we at We Cop Watch have been reflecting on our strengths and weaknesses so that we can continue to be a better support network for the years to come. We want and need to do better for Ramsey, but we need more people involved to make this possible. Ramsey's in good spirits, but in his first year in prison, Ramsey has already put in solitary confinement. He's been cut and has been moved around several times. Ramsey's currently at Franklin County Correctional Facility in upstate New York on the Canadian border, making it hard for him to stay connected to his community. We as a community can do more to keep Ramsey safe and healthy. We want to plug you in any way you can. Consider the following. First and foremost, Ramsey needs continuous donations of any form. Keeping his communications open to the outside and money in his commissary is a must. We Cop Watch helps manage his PayPal donations in the areas mentioned. If you can donate one time or a little every month, feel free to use this PayPal, officialramseyorta@gmail.com, or send postal order only to Ramsey Orta, that's O-R-T-A, 16A4200, Franklin Correctional Facility, P.O. Box 10, Malone, New York, 12953-0010. You can also send food packages to Ramsey. There's an Amazon wish list that has food items that the jail accepts. Prison Radio will post the link on our website. You can send books to Ramsey as well. Ramsey loves to read political work, Know Your Rights books, history books, etc. You can send books to the address we read above, which we will also post on our website.
Another prisoner in New York State, Robert Seth Hayes, is also requesting support right now. Seth was involved in the Black liberation struggle in the 1970s and has been incarcerated for decades. Seth has diabetes and has been trying to have access to a potentially life-saving monitor for his insulin pump. According to JerichoNewYork.org, the New York State Department of Corrections never ordered the pump. Supporters are being asked to call Governor Cuomo's office at 518-474-8390. Scripts for what to say are on itsgoingdown.org under the headline, Black Liberation Prisoner Robert Seth Hayes Still in Danger from Medical Neglect. Herman Bell, another former Black Panther incarcerated in New York State, was viciously attacked by prison guards on September 5th, 2017. Herman has fractured ribs, damage to his eye from the use of mace, as well as sustaining blows to the face. He has bruises on his body and is suffering headaches, a sign of a possible concussion. Jericho, New York is asking folks to write to Herman at his new address so that authorities know that folks on the outside are paying attention to what is happening to him. His address is Herman Bell, 79C0262, Five Points Correctional Facility, P.O. Box 119, Romulus, New York, 14541. We will also post that information on our website, prisonradioshow.wordpress.com.
In mid-August, correctional officials in Florida put the entire state's prison population on lockdown, citing concerns about widespread rioting. During the September 9th strikes against the prison system that spread across the U.S. last year, Floridian prisoners were among the participants. This September, thousands of Florida prisoners were evacuated in the lead-up to Hurricane Irma hitting Florida. It is hard to find news documenting what has happened to folks in Florida's jails, but we hope to find more news to share with you all for our next show. In Texas, which has the largest prisoner population in the U.S., prisoners reported deteriorating conditions in jails affected by Hurricane Harvey. Flooding, lack of access to medical supplies, lack of access to phones, lack of electricity, and lack of water have all been reported by prisoners in Texas, especially in the state prison in Beaumont. As hurricane season continues, we'll keep sharing news of how prisoners are being affected and what folks can do to help out from afar.
And next here on the Prison Radio Show, we will air part two of our interview with Jalil Muntaqim. In this part of the interview, Jalil talks about political prisoners, first getting into the definition of political prisoners and why he thinks it is important to have a clear understanding of the differences between social prisoners and political prisoners. He talks about the importance of recognition of political prisoners in the U.S. and what recognition means to him. Jalil discusses the history of the Jericho Movement, which is a U.S.-based organization in support of political prisoners. He discusses Jericho's current project trying to have the international jurists of the United Nations come to the U.S. to examine the recognition of political prisoners and conditions in U.S. prisons. Jalil talks about the 13th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution and how the history of prisons in the U.S. and their connection to slavery. He ends this piece talking about prison abolition and how to bring it about.
So that's the just and part of the dynamics that happened in this case to get this conviction. Perjured testimony, witnesses been tortured, right? Withholding government documents. And a weapon that's not the murder weapon. What the hell am I still doing here? And it's due to the politics of the case, due to the politics of the history of struggle in this country. And that lends to the idea of what? We are, in fact, political prisoners. And political prisoners exist in the United States, although they deny the existence of political prisoners, they deny that they have political prisoners, they, in fact, do prosecute those who are dissenters, those who dissent, right? But they prosecute them under the foundations or the basis of criminal proceedings. They criminalize political dissent, and therefore they can deny. What we call plausible denial? Plausible denial, because they've been convicted in the criminal court. Right? But they're in fact political prisoners in the United States. I'm a little concerned about people trying to, in my opinion, water down right, the idea to make it inclusive of everybody who's convicted of a crime based on the politics of the socioeconomic conditions, the politics of the United States, racism, white supremacy, and the whole bit, and the conditions of the social conditions that create a environment from which people will turn to criminality in order to survive, right? My problems with that issue is that one of intent and one of their terms of their relationship to government at large, right? So if anyone who is engaged in criminal activity or for self-aggrandizement, their survival, trying to make money, drug dealers, pimps, car thieves, robbers, and et cetera. And they're doing their activities or they're engaging in discriminatory activity for the basis of personal survival, right, to make money or to get rich or whatever the case may be, right? Their relationship to the government is not politics. It's not political. And so we have certain individuals who try to deal with the issue or deal with the question of political prejudice and saying that they're inclusive because of the conditions of government oppression, government repression, right, socioeconomic conditions, and racism. However, political prejudice is deliberate, right? Those engaged in the politics of struggle is deliberate, right? It's self-sacrificing, right? Their understanding of the socioeconomic dynamics, society at large, is one of repression and oppression. And they've taken a stand on that, right? So this conscious, deliberate activity on their part should not be diminished in terms of their commitment, right? And that's important. And so I maintain that we have to make a clear understanding between the two, social prisoners and political prisoners. Now, in terms of social prisoners who become politicized once they're in prison, again, here's a conscious determination, right? Now their relationship has changed between them and the institutions of oppression, right? Now they have become politicized. And on the basis of that relationship change and their consciousness in regards to that, they have, in fact, then become under the gamut of a political prisoner, right? So we have the politicized prisoners who become political prisoners. Then there are those in the streets who are activists in the streets and was engaging in the streets, trying to change social order in the streets, committed themselves, made self-sacrifices, into a point of maybe subjecting themselves to the ultimate sacrifice, right? And or been captured, sent to prison. They are indeed political prisoners and or prisoners of war, all right? And they should be recognized as such. Again, as mentioned earlier about the failure of recognition of U.S. political prisoners and the negligible support that we have. Another analogy that I raise is the fact that many of us from back in the 60s and 70s were contemporaries of Nelson Mandela, right, and his struggle against apartheid. But our struggle is very similar. It was against Jim Crow. Very similar conditions, a very similar pathos of struggle, all right, both psychologically, culturally, socially, and politically, all right. However, by virtue of the ANC and the movement that was engaged, their success, right, people recognized Nelson and all those who were in Robben Island with him, right, as having been political prisoners. No such recognition is given to us, right? Perhaps that's because we were defeated, right? Or, again, our inability to create the kind of international solidarity that was successfully done for the movement of apartheid. One of the things that Malcolm made an argument was that, Malcolm X made an argument, was that if you continue to keep your struggle as a civil rights struggle, then it can be contained domestically as a domestic issue, right? And he made the argument that our struggle is for human rights. And when we struggle for human rights, it becomes international, right? It cannot be contained within the domestic politics of the government from which you're challenging. And so this is what I'm trying to do now, or have been doing for many of the years that I've been in prison, is to raise our understanding of our struggle as a question of human rights and more so than issues of civil rights. Yeah, 1996, I was at Eastern Correctional Facility, and I put out the call for Jericho, right? Jericho originally started with the Provisional Government of the Republic of New Africa, right? They originally started having marches in Washington, D.C., calling for political prisoners, what they call Jericho March, under the biblical story of Jericho, and then the walls come tumbling down, right, with people with loud noises and blowing the horns around the kingdom, okay, and the walls came tumbling down. So that was the principal philosophy behind it. And in 1995, they stopped. RNA stopped having these marches in the White House. They were annual marches. And so in 96, I put out a call for them to be restated, restarted, right? My comrade, Sophia Bukhari, my dear comrade, Sophia Bukhari, and Herman Ferguson came to visit me. And they basically said, listen, Gido, we cannot do this thing in a year's time, right? I said, we'll organize it. We believe this needs to be, but we need to work on it. And so it took 2 years in 1998. And in 1998, they were successful in organizing a national campaign that brought 6,000 activists from across the country to Washington, D.C. For the Jericho March and demonstration and rally. And it was so enthusiastic, successful, that we decided that we have to continue this. And on the basis of the needs for political prisoners, we started the Jericho Amnesty Movement. And it was 1998. Next year will be the 20th anniversary of the existence of Jericho. And Jericho was able to, have been able to, raise the profile of political prisoners, both domestically and on the international platform. They've been to Geneva, Switzerland, and gave presentations to the United Nations on a couple of occasions in that particular time. They have established a legal defense fund for political prisoners. They have established a medical assistance committee for political prisoners. They established programs to assist family members to visit political prisoners. They have an annual fundraiser to get commissary funds and other things of that nature for political prisoners over the years, and continue to raise the question of the existence of political prisoners in various forms and events, so they won't be neglected or not be forgotten over the last nearly 20 years. There's more that can be done and should be done, of course, but the present chairman of Jericho, Jihad Abdul Mumit, former member of the Black Panther Party, former political prisoner, is committed to this this ideal, right, and committed to Jericho. Presently, there is under discussion a new proposal to have the international jurists to come and tour the United States and raise the questions of human rights abuses as pertains specifically to political prisoners. If we are successful in getting this done, it will be the second time we have the international jurors come to the United States. The first time I was able to have them, myself and others, was able to have them come was in 1980, I think it was. And it was based on my first campaign that I organized when I was in San Quentin and also in Attica. The first time a petition was submitted to the United Nations dealing with the issues of political prisoners and the existence and the conditions of U.S. prisons. It was the National Prisoners Campaign to petition the United Nations. And I started that back in 1977. An international jurist came to the United States. They interviewed several prisoners, political prisoners, right, and they reported to the United Nations that political prisoners, in fact, exist in the United States. Right? For some people who may recall back then, when Andrew Young was an ambassador to the United Nations, we had a journalist go to one of his press conferences in Paris and ask the single question. I asked to have that journalist ask the single question, does political prisoners exist in the United States? And Andrew Young answered affirmatively, quote, perhaps thousands, unquote. And for his admission of that truth, he was fired from his ambassadorship to the United Nations by then President Jimmy Carter. Right? There was a big hoopla behind him making that admission. When we consider again the question of the political prisoners, and we consider again Martin Luther King when he was arrested in Alabama, right? And he made one of his major statements written on toilet paper while he was in jail, his letter from a Birmingham jail. And if anybody ever gets the opportunity to read that, I suggest that they do so. Reading that particular document, you can look at it and see that it was basically a strategy. He's laying out a strategy of protest. And it indicated for him at that time, and he was letting people know at that time, that he and others who was in prisons and in jails at that time were in fact political prisoners. So the history of our struggle is long and arduous, right? And I am only contributing to that, just one of the contributors of that in this continuum of struggle. And Jericho is just another institution towards those ends.
One last question about recognition and political prisoners. I know in lots of other places in the world, like in Ireland in the 1980s, pushing for political prisoner status meant pushing for a special kind of status within the prisons. Is that part of your vision about what pushing for that recognition would be about, or what does it mean in terms of like what would come about that recognition?
That's a good question. That would be ideal, right? But U.S. prison system, right, state and federal, is structured in such a way that makes that almost impossible. All right, we have an individual, for instance, myself and co-defendant Herman Bell, right, and other comrades like Robert Seth Hayes, right, we are prevented from being in the same institution, in the same prison. Now, what will that do if we were to make an argument that we all should be held in the same institution? Well, naturally, it would also create a condition for us to be under more scrutiny and restrictions, right? So then we have to fight that, all right? I think we would rather put our attention and energy towards getting the hell out of penitentiary rather than trying to get recognition of being inside prison. So in areas, for instance, like Ireland, where it was a broad-based mass movement, right, against a recognized colonial power, British colonial power, and it was an extensive organizing, right, and a political party in support of that movement or that struggle. They had the conditions from which they can make that kind of an argument. Here in the United States, those conditions doesn't exist, right? And so I don't see the need to put forth that kind of energy at this point in time, when we really should be concentrating on how in the hell to get out of prison. Now, if by chance or by deliberate action, right, we are capable of building the kind of support base, mass support for political prisoners, right, and including the demand for their amnesty and release that Jericho has consistently been making, perhaps we can create that kind of argument and fight to have them brought together. Another interesting point was that during the National Prisoners Petition Campaign to the United Nations, it was so successful. After I talked about Andrew Young at making that admission, Fidel Castro made an offer to trade our political prisoners with some prisoners they had in Cuba. All right. That was in December of 1979 or 1980. He made that offer. Unfortunately, we did not have in place the individuals who was able to challenge the State Department to make that exchange, right? But Fidel eventually, during that time, did exchange some prisoners with some other captives, right? They did make some kind of exchange. Unfortunately, we were not included. And that lends to, again, to my argument that the weakness of the support base for political prisoners in the United States. You know, if our support base was stronger, we could have made that happen. And that's one of the reasons why we continue to fight, and the Jericho continue to try to represent us both on a national and international level. Back in 1979, myself and two other prisoners in Greenhaven, we filed a petition in the United States District Court condemning or challenging the 13th Amendment of the United States Constitution. And it was the first formal civil rights petition that was submitted to the courts on that particular issue. And we also submitted the document to a form of the document to the United Nations, right, and try to get them involved and engaged. ultimately we lost. What we were trying to do is get that clause in the 13th Amendment removed where it says slavery and involuntary servitude shall not exist in the United States except for those who are being duly convicted of a crime, right? So what we find is that slavery in the United States was never abolished, right? It was institutionalized, right? They ended the private holding of slaves, but institutionalized the state holding a slave. And so on the virtue of that history in and of itself, what we're finding is that mass incarceration is a perpetuation of the idea of the holding of individuals as slaves, right? And by the history of this country, we also see that who they are, based upon their history, the majority of individuals who are in prison are black and Latino, people of color, all right? So this isn't conforming to the history of this country. There has been, again, a continuum. And as I mentioned earlier about white supremacy and the efforts to resurrect the Confederates, that continuum, that fight from the Civil War continues 150 years later. It's been non-ending, particularly as it affects black people, right? After the Civil War, they had the Black Codes. And then Black codes turned into Jim Crow. And Jim Crow turned into mass incarceration, right? And this is a form of repression, right? To deny the human rights of people of color, especially black people in this country. And so when we look at the issues of mass incarceration in the broader picture of history of this country, we can see that continuum. Well, who's going to deny him? Who's going to deny one to abolish prison? You know? So, I mean, that's not even one thing for consider. What is considered is how, right? Naturally, prison in and of itself is big business, right? It is a monetary, it's been monetized, okay? Just as slavery was monetized. And so in order to abolish prison, you have to create an alternative to that monetization, right? And that in and of itself creates a whole new level of consciousness amongst people, right? Our thinking has to change in terms of redistribution of wealth in this country, right? We know that one of the principal reasons for people coming to prison is due to poverty. So can we get rid of poverty? And if that's a part of the process of abolishing prison, then that's the way we need to go. Okay. So we find that abolishing the prison has to be abolishing the whole capitalist society, capitalist system. All right. We have to change our mythology of appropriation and redistribution of wealth in this country. You cannot do one without the other. Right, because it is, in fact, a part of the corporate entity of the social order. Right? So when we talk about abolition of prisons, of course we're down with that, right? Just as much as we're down with the end of capitalist imperialism. Now, the mythology and how you do it, how you go about doing it, I have a problem with them making the argument of abolishing prison without also including the argument of destroying capitalist imperialism, right? You cannot do one without the other, right? They are interlinked and tied to one another because they're part of the monetized system of capitalism, right? You have corporations who are invested in prisons. So that means you have to challenge those corporations. We have to stop the monetization of prisons in order to abolish it. So you can scream and holler as much as you want about abolishing prison, but if you're not challenging the corporations that are invested in prison, those corporations that are in the stock market, on Wall Street, that are invested in prison, if you're not challenging them, then you're spitting in the wind and it's blowing back in your face. All right? Your vision and your idea of what you are up against is screwed. You know, it's incoherent to reality. Right? In fact, you're delusional. You know, I'm going to put it that way. You're delusional. if you can think you can abolish prison and not destroy and not abolish capitalist imperialism. Right.
That was part two of an interview with Jalil A. Muntakim, a political prisoner and former Black Panther Party member who is currently incarcerated in New York State. You can find part one online at prisonradioshow.wordpress.com, and you can look out for part three coming up on our next show.
The time is presently 5:35 p.m., and you're listening to The Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and www.ckut.ca.
The Leonard and Bina Ellen Art Gallery and CKUT present Vincent Misen's 1, 2, 3. Set to a Congolese rumba, Misen's video explores the participation of Congolese intellectuals in the Situationist International Movement and the unfinished work of decolonization from 1968 to today. The screening is accompanied by conversations between Misen, art historian Thomas McDonough, musician Pierre Quenders, and anthropologist Bob White. Thursday, September 28th at Bar La Ritz PDB, 179 Rue Jean Talon West. Doors at 6:30 p.m. Free entrance, a CKUT co-presentation.
Get ready for the best week Montreal has to offer. Pop Montreal is back for its Sweet 16, and it is better than ever. The festival will take over venues, clubs, theaters, and churches for a five-day extravaganza of music, art, and film, September 13th to the 17th. Highlights include William Basinski, Ostra, Mount Erie, Sweatshop Boys, Juana Molina, plus over 400 more bands, artist workshops, artist talks, a fashion show, a record fair, and an artisanal market. Tickets, passes, packages, and more information at popmontreal.com, a CKUT co-presentation.
Liberated back into the community, what an innocent child defer will do upon landing. Landing back into the community is no accidental choice of words, because navigating the systemically corrupt Philly court system can only be like returning from Mars, a place where human laws of Earth simply do not apply. My name is Muchi Ajimo Saberu, and I was born and raised in the warm bosom of Richard Allen Projects at 813 C. Sartain Place. Not only was I falsely prosecuted as a child, but I was actually innocent with the evidence to prove it. I was a child, not a juvenile. As I have often pointed out, the word juvenile is a sophistic white supremacist legal euphemism for nigger child, codified anti-black and brown hatred of children of color used to rob us of our childhood, or as I always say, to dechildize us. I coined the phrase death by incarceration in part because it fully expresses both the gravity and depth and hatred of white supremacy for black, brown, and poor white people in general, but specifically melanated children. Sean from Decarcerate PA and the Amistad Law Project asked me to support Brother Ghani's child death by incarceration resentencing hearing by informing the community at the upcoming rally on Sunday the 23rd, 2017, who are promoting restorative justice, what can and will I do upon my imminent return. Legally speaking, I have never harmed anyone in the community. However, I still must make amends for personal relationships that have been destroyed because of my being kidnapped. So I'll just continue to do the work that I did when I was in the community under the stewardship of Sister Nadira Williams, but I'll also elevate what I'm doing for the past 3.5 decades. Now I'll get to do a full scale on the national and international level. These are just some of the things that I'll do upon my landing. An African Senate think tank. Establish an African Senate think tank to expose, deconstruct, refute, and systemic anti-Kemitism, African culture, and our society on issues from A to Z. Those that defame the impeccable character, history, culture of African people locally, nationally, and internationally. My cultural and political vocation will be to conduct primarily those two organizations I have founded for child advocacy, Juveniles R Us, Our Question, and answer is our mission statement and mantra. Juveniles, no, we are children. Juveniles for the redress of an unconstitutional sentence and conviction. Junior us. To advocate for children sentenced to death by incarceration, but who are actually innocent with the evidence to prove it. Power PA, parents organized for winning educational results. To advocate for black and brown children in public education from A to Z. To implement Dr. Edward Robinson's proven successful curriculum of infusion in the public school system to provide deep structural African learning to all Philadelphia pupils. Provide updated and relevant textbooks, supplies that make sure more of the school budget is directly allocated to the children first. To decriminalize our students by moving the police out of the schools and put them on the streets to fight crime where they belong. To vindicate the rights of a child under the law to sound and comprehensive education free from cultural menticide. The Temple of Mayat, to cater to the spiritual needs of the African community from a purely African-centered perspective by promoting a fully immersive cultural haven from an otherwise cultural encroachment. Publishing House, to publish the works of children and adults who come up with innovative ways to solve problems and surmount challenges of the 2007 era. And lastly, food sovereignty, creating and maintaining a self-sustaining people's food bank so that the community can literally grow and eat their own food, working in concert with our sister city in Jackson, Mississippi, as a friend of Jackson, to create food sovereignty. In the bowels of the Terror Dome, this is Muti Ajimur Saberu.
That was our inside correspondent from Pennsylvania, Muti Ajimu Asegbro. Muti was sentenced to life in prison at the age of 17. He is an advocate for people sentenced to life as children, as well as a jailhouse lawyer. After a Supreme Court decision that spelled the end of the practice of sentencing children to life in prison, the state of Pennsylvania has been granting people like Muti resentencing hearings, and quite a few people have been released from prison. So up next here on the Prison Radio Show is an interview from the Final Straw Radio with a supporter of anarchist prisoner Kara Wilde. The interview discusses the context for Kara's incarceration, the conditions she faces as a trans prisoner in France, and how people on the outside can support her.
We're speaking with a supporter of Kara Wilde. Kara is a trans woman from the USA, currently being held in a men's prison in France, so far for a year, and finally facing trial in September. Thanks a lot for chatting.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course. Can you tell listeners about Kara and how she came to be imprisoned in France?
Yeah, so Kara is a force of nature. She's an artist, an anarchist, a squatter, and a witch. She was traveling overseas in 2016 and through a series of unfortunate events ended up in Belgium and then traveled to France in late April or early May. There were a lot of uprisings going on at that time because there were some laws proposed there, some labor reform laws called Loi du Travail. And those laws are basically similar to right to work laws and also took away the standard 35-hour work week, where after that people would get overtime. And the labor movements there are just like a lot more on their game. So when legislators tried to put through like this law that might not have been that big, they showed a really strong force of resistance because they don't want their own autonomy in the workforce to be taken away. And there was this big response by both trade unions and student groups and revolutionaries. And the movement came to be known as Nuit Debout, which means up all night. And it was sort of similar to what we had in the U.S. of Occupy, where they were having really broad calls against both the labor laws and the world that it represents. There were a lot of different actions there, and Kara happened to be present and ended up getting arrested and accused of being involved in an action that happened on the 18th of May in 2016, in which a cop car was smashed and then somebody threw a firework into the broken back windshield, which caught the cop car on fire. And there happened to be two cops in the car when it set on fire.
So at this point in the story, Kara's been incarcerated and arrested and accused of of being involved in the smashing up of the police car. What sorts of repression do trans prisoners face as opposed to cis prisoners when they're incarcerated?
So cops love policing people's genders and misgendering trans prisoners, which is really terrible and dehumanizing because there's so much mutual hatred, but the cops, like the jail guards or prison guards, have so much more power than inmates do. And also, like, in a prison, I've heard that doctors, nurses, and psychologists have misgendered Kara and some of the other trans women there, which has felt almost worse because they're supposed to just, like, have more experience and be more educated. And also there's, like, internalized transphobia that Kara, like, sees in other trans prisoners. So she's in a block, like, basically in solitary with other trans women, and she can go out for a certain amount of time every day to go into the prison yard and smoke cigarettes and exercise with other trans women, and also they go to art class together. And so even though they're all trans women, like, they have a lot of different political ideas, and some of them are kind of terrible and have internalized transphobia themselves. But it's also nice to be able to interact with other people and go to art class with them, and Kara has had some friends there. Also, like, when you're supporting a trans prisoner, a lot of people, like, expect to know specific details about the person that you're supporting's, like, transition in their bodies in ways that doesn't happen with cis people, that I think is, like, really not okay. Like, people wanting to know, like, where a person is in their transition or what they're interested in that way.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And so maybe as, like, a practical, would you suggest something like, if someone is deciding, we'll go more into writing to Kara later, but addressing that issue, can you talk about what a, and this goes for whether someone's inside or outside of prison, what is a respectful approach towards questions, if you have them, about someone's identity and what's important to know and maybe what's not important for you to know?
Yeah, I think a lot of times people will just ask, like, about a trans person, like, has that person had bottom surgery yet, as if that's an indication of whether they're, like, a legitimate woman or man or whatever they identify as. And I, like, actually don't think that's anybody's, I don't think anybody's entitled to have that information about another person. And if they offer that information to you, then I think that that's okay. But in general, I just think people should be okay not knowing that. That's, like, a question that I've gotten that, like, makes me feel really uncomfortable when I hear it. And I don't know what to say. I'm just like, that's not your business.
Yeah, and it seems like such a, like, straightforward thing to, like, a reasonable approach of, like, actually, I don't feel like talking about my genitals. I hope that's okay with you.
Yeah,
or somebody else's. But, yeah, I think a lot of cis people have a lot of, yeah, have digested a lot of representations of trans identities through popular media, or just don't know where to start. And in having conversations, and yeah, it's probably good for them to hear just, like, that's actually none of your business, and focus on them as a person. And just, if somebody wants to use a pronoun, like, trust that that's the pronoun that they want to use, and that's, like, fine.
Yeah, exactly.
So although Kara was originally denied access to hormones in August of 2016, she was finally granted access, which is great. What did that process entail, and what impact have hormones had on Kara's experience while inside?
So I'm not totally sure exactly how she started getting hormones. I think that they just, like, the prison started listening to all the kites that she was sending, being like, I need to see the doctor, I need hormones. I had sent some paperwork from the clinic in Chicago trying to, like, help her get information from that clinic to the prison to inform them of the dosages that she was on. I don't think that really helped. I think that in general, like, France likes to be perceived as a really progressive prison system. And so I think that other trans prisoners who are incarcerated with Kara have access to hormones. And so I think eventually they just listened and believed her. Also, I don't remember, there was like a lot going on for me at that time, but I think it's possible that people over there like advocated on her behalf, and I think actions were happening also around that, like calling for her to get hormones. The dose there really is not good though. Like, the doctors there are not endocrinologists, and so Kara's excited to get out and be back on a dose that feels good for her.
And can you say a few more words about what the frequently what sort of mental health experiences people have being getting off of or being denied the hormones?
Yeah, I think that a lot of times for people who've been on hormones and then being taken off of them cold turkey can cause a lot of intense like psychological dysmorphia, which is like a phenomena where somebody feels either physically in their body or mentally or emotionally that what's happening is not aligned with the gender that they identify with, if that makes sense. And so it can be really intense, like to the point of like feeling strong feelings of like self-hatred and suicide, or just like feeling really disgusted with your body, sick to your stomach, that type of thing.
Yeah. Would you explain what Kara's visitation rights are like and the various groups in France that support her?
Yeah, she gets visitors pretty regularly. There's one friend who's visited like every week for the last 9 months or something. She can have visitors like up to 5 days a week, I think. And I think maybe 4 days a week, actually. And her lawyer can visit whenever they want. If you're coming from France, then your visit is for 40 minutes. But if you're coming from the U.S. then or far away, you get a double visit of 80 minutes. And in the visiting room, it's like a room with two doors and a table with like four chairs. And there's like a hallway on attached that each door opens to that are separate. And you come in on one door and Kara comes in on the other. And they're actually touch visits, which is really cool. There's a woman named Larissa who visits Kara pretty regularly, and she visits all of the trans women who are incarcerated at Fleury-Mérogis. And she's just like a volunteer, and her name is Larissa. And she's like previously brought Kara books. They read the autobiography of Malcolm X together and talked about it. And she's just been like a really helpful supporter. There's also a group called Calmero, and they give Kara and Krem, one of Kara's co-defendants, who's another incarcerated anarchist that we should talk about, they give both of them money every month for their commissary, which is really awesome, and people from that group will go and visit her pretty regularly, like a couple times a month or once a week. And then Acceptus T is another group that, they were like one of the first groups that reached out to me to tell me that she'd been incarcerated in early June of last year. And they are a group that brings trans prisoners clothes, because in France you can actually like wear your own clothes. There's not uniforms. And so, yeah, they, for a while we were sending books to them, and I think people still send books to them, and then they pass them off to another supporter who brings them to Kara because they don't have a lot of capacity to bring her books. It seems like she's got a lot of support, which is really good. Oh, there's another group that visits and is helpful too called DefCol, and they formed during the uprisings last spring and summer as a way to like help support all of the people who were swept up during the Nuit Debout, like no matter what, to try to help people like not snitch and feel supported. And they visit Kara pretty regularly also and do fundraising for the legal support, help find lawyers, and that type of thing.
That's a lot. That sounds like kind of an awesome like series of projects that are supporting Kara and other prisoners in that scenario. As an artist, how is Kara engaging with her experience as a political prisoner? Can you briefly describe her style and what inspires her?
Yeah, I'm really amazed by Kara's ability to maintain her curiosity, inspiration, and thirst for the world, despite such terrible circumstances that she's living in. She's inspired by the natural world, anarchy, thirst for liberation, different like romances and sweeties that she has. She loves everything, like a lot of things that start with the word, the letter W, like witches, whales, wolves, wilderness, wiling out. She's been having really vivid dreams, and she's started making these really amazing prayer candles, like paintings to go on, like the Catholic candles that are called Kara's Witchy Woo Woo Candles. And soon those will be available online and at anarchist bookstores around who want to sell them. She's also made two zines that I was able to help her complete. One of them is called Railroad Girls 2, which is a comic about riding trains and squatting and stuff like that. That's Railroad Girls 2, The Way It Felt. And then she made another zine called Cute Beasts versus the State, which is about polyamorous relationships.
That was part of an interview with a supporter of Kara Wilde, who is an anarchist prisoner being held in France. You can hear the rest of the interview at the website of the Final Straw Radio. The time is presently 5:56 p.m., and you've been listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and www.ckut.ca. The next episode of the Prison Radio Show will air on Friday, September 22nd, that's next Friday, at 11 a.m. We, of course, are on the air on the fourth Friday and the second Thursday and fourth Friday of every month. If you have any questions on anything that you've heard on today's show, or if you wish to be involved with the show, feel free to contact us at prison@ckut.ca. You can also follow us on Twitter @PrisonRadioShow. Formerly incarcerated people are encouraged to participate. If you're in jail, we encourage you to get in touch or get involved with the show in any way possible. Folks can leave a message on our listener comment line at 514-448-4041, extension 2547. Thanks for tuning into the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Noah.
And my name is Candace.
And we've been your hosts for today. Please stay tuned.
There is this thing. Do you realize
what is?
There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news? Brought to you live.